Sahana Vavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Sahavirjan Karavavahai Tejasvina Vadhitamastama Shanti, Shanti, Shanti. Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Verses 4 to 10. By me, in my unmanifested form, this entire universe is pervaded. All beings are in me, but I am not in them. And yet everything that is created does not rest in me. Behold my mystic opulence. Although I am the maintainer of all living entities, and although I am everywhere, I am not part of this cosmic manifestation. For myself is the very source of creation. Understand that as the mighty wind blowing everywhere rests always in the sky, all created beings rest in me. O son of Kunti, at the end of the millennium, all material manifestations enter into my nature. And at the beginning of another millennium, by my potency, I create them again. The whole cosmic order is under me. Under my will, it is automatically manifested again and again. And under my will, it is annihilated at the end. O Dhananjaya, all this work cannot bind me. I am ever detached from all these material activities, seated as though neutral. This material energy, which is one of my energies, is working under my direction, O son of Kunti, producing all moving and non-moving beings. Under its rule, this manifestation is created and annihilated again and again. The Achinta Beta Beta Tattva relationship between Chit, Achit, and Ishwara. With verse 4, the Lord begins the description of his opulence, Aishwarya, which inspires devotion in the hearts of the non-envious persons. Krishna creates, pervades, and annihilates the entire cosmos through his energy. Although he is the supreme controller, the material world nevertheless functions independently, and he thus remains neutral and detached. As Brahman and Paramatma, the Lord pervades, supports, and controls the entire universe. Since there is no difference between the energy and the source of energy, in one sense, he is personally present everywhere. Although he is personally present, we cannot see him because he is not, cannot be seen with material eyes. However, when we spiritualize our senses, we can see him even within the material energy. The energy of the Lord is everywhere. And when we become transcendentally situated, we can see God eye to eye everywhere. The Lord's statement that everything is resting on him, Matstani Sarvabhutani, in verse 4, should not be misunderstood, Srila Prabhupada explains. The Lord is not directly concerned with the maintenance and sustenance of this material world, this material manifestation. Sometimes we see a picture of Atlas holding the globe on his shoulders. He seems to be very tired, holding this great earthly planet. Such an image should not be entertained in connection with Krishna's upholding this created universe. To keep us from making such a mistake, the Lord explains in verse 5 that everything does not rest on him in the way a materialist might think. Krishna is not directly involved in the maintenance of the material world. Everything is done simply by his will through his energies. Satya Sankalpata Shakti. Thus all beings rest on Krishna's energy, and yet he is aloof. Although he creates and maintains the material world, he is not associated directly with it. Everything depends on him, but he is independent of everything because he is not attached. Since the Lord is the embodiment of pure transcendental mellow, he prefers to stay aloof from the material energy and the materialistic living entities. Thus they are not actually in him, but are rather supported by his energy. On the other hand, the Lord is attracted by his pure devotees and is eager to be involved in loving reciprocations with him. Therefore, later in this chapter, it declares that his devotees are truly in him. I envy no one, nor am I partial to anyone. I am equal to all, but whoever renders service unto me in devotion is a friend, is in me, and I am also a friend to him. Right, so this is giving you that key. There, that connection is that what he means by in him. Because the point is Krishna is everything, so you can't say it's not within him. But the point is he as a person is not interested. You know what I'm saying? So it's that consideration. You know what I'm saying? You know, just like your hand, your arm, you know, what you can see, then you'll be more close with. But your back, you never think, you know, I am this back. You know, you may think I am this face, you know, and you know so many other things, but you won't think you're your back. You understand? It's just because it's not, you just don't think about it. It's not important to you. So those who have turned their face from Krishna, then all their activities and all that have no interest for him. Right? The interest is in loving exchange. Not that he doesn't have interest in the living entity. But the living entities won't exchange that interest. So therefore, how can you deal? Does this make some sense? You know, so it's a fine point is that everything's in him, but at the same time is not. Right? He is in everything, but at the same time he's not. So that's this element of the Chinta Beta Beta Tattva. One has to be able to understand is that it runs by his desire. And so his potency is there with the material energy, so the material energy can carry out everything. But he is only interacting with his devotees. So in the material creation, he's only involved in the primary creation. Secondary creation, he's not. So he's the potency that does everything. But at the same time, as the material cause is going to be the material energy. Right? And the operative cause will be the living entities. So the living entity is thinking I'm God and interacting with what he calls his energy. But actually, it's not. He's not God and it's not his energy. It's only a reflection of the Lord interacting with the internal potency. Does that make sense? And thus in verse 4, the Lord says, Matstani sarva bhutani. All beings are in me. In verse 5, he seemingly contradicts himself by saying, Nacha matstani bhutani, all beings are not in me. Right? So, are not in me, meaning as a person. They're in me as God. Right? But, you know, there's no interaction. But in verse 29, he says again, Maite, the devotee is in me. These apparent contradictions are actually Krishna's mystic opulence, Yoga Aishwaryam. Although he's the maintainer and he is everywhere, he is not part of the creation. Although he's not obliged to be personally present, out of his causeless mercy, he's personally involved in the lives of the devotees. This personal involvement is invoked by pure devotion. Right? Remember, this is what makes this chapter more important, more special. Because previously, it was how you in your position taking that material energy that you identify with and have value in and connecting it to the Lord because the Lord is connected to it. Right? But at the same time, is ultimately, the dead matter is dead matter. And Krishna doesn't have any interest in that. Right? You know what I'm saying? You don't, your shadow is not of great importance to you. Right? Like that. So, the living entity, so Srila Prabhupada says, his energy is spread all over the universe, all over the world, and by his energy he can be present anywhere and everywhere simultaneously. The conclusion is, when his devotee is there, he can manifest himself everywhere and anywhere. But when there's no devotee, he is not there, although his energy is there. There are many instances. Prahlad Maharaj saw Krishna from the pillar. Lecture on Bhagavad Gita, 947, New York, 1966, right? So in other words, the devotee sees him there, he's present. But if the devotee's not seeing him there, he's only there in his energies. Right? Because his potency is there, it's been given to Maya, so what you see, what you're dealing with is the adibhautik, it's just the material manifestation. Right? But if you can see, then he's there as the adidaiva and as the adiyagya. But if you don't, then all you're dealing with is material energy. It's not there. So you have to be there and not there. Right? You can appreciate, it's there. You can't appreciate, it's not there. Right? But his energy is always there. So he's the source of the energy. He's the director of the energy. Still, him personally is not there. So he's bringing this up. Because in the previous chapters, this element of him being there is very important and connected with karma yoga, jnana yoga. Right? But now we're bringing out the element of him as a person being there. Right? So it can go a step further, because Prahlad Maharaj, it's not that he's just there and he's holding up the pillar and therefore he's everywhere as Brahman and Paramatma. He's there as a person. So for the devotee, he's there as a person. Right? Does this make sense? So that person, then, the devotee is in him, he is in the devotee. But for the others, then, you know, it's not really happening. One is in the material energy, and that's as good as it gets. The story of Prahlad Maharaj proves that the Lord's all-pervasiveness does not necessitate the loss of his personal existence. The sunshine is the all-pervading expansion of the sun, but the sun still exists. Similarly, although so many units emanate from the Lord, he remains the complete balance. It's official Upanishad. To help us understand this inconceivable relation with his energy, the Lord presents an analogy in verse 6. As the wind, although blowing everywhere, still always rests in the sky, so everything rests in Krishna. Everything is moving under the will of the Supreme. Right? See, means space is not affected by the wind. Right? Space is not involved in the wind, though the wind rests in space. There's no space, wind won't be there. Does that make sense? So it's everything is moving under the will of the Supreme. By his will, everything is being created, maintained, and annihilated. Still, he is aloof from everything, as the sky is always aloof from the activities of the wind. Right? It's because of him, the support is there, that potency. So the material energy is able to carry out everything. But still, Krishna is separate. Right? So that's why the element of being non-envious, of being non... Otherwise, how do you understand these two things? Because they're contradictory. Right? If they're contradictory, then how will something be seen as correct if we're looking from the element of justice? Because envy means, you know, there's an element of justice. So how will we see? Because it's not balanced. How can it be both at once? You're guilty and not guilty. You know, it's one or the other. By this example, we may get an idea how the living entities can be simultaneously independent and dependent on the Lord. They are independent to serve the Lord directly or indirectly. But in both cases, the scope of action is determined by the Lord. Right? They're going to be serving directly or indirectly, but if you're serving indirectly and don't know it, that's called illusion. That's called Maya. Right? So that's why then the element of, so they've forgotten Krishna. Right? So they're indirectly still serving Krishna, but they don't know it and they don't get the benefit. So once one knows that, then those elements that make you forget, those indirect activities, then those are connected to Krishna. So they give the effect of the direct. Does that make sense? But Krishna's pointing out is still in the direct, there's the element of the exchange, the devotion, the personal relationship. So it's not just enough that it's intellectually connected and it's the Lord and His energies. No, He's a person. Right? Does that make sense? So it goes then beyond this. That's why these chapters are different. Right? They're saying the same thing, but they're taking it that step beyond. Right? So the indirect connected to Krishna, now Krishna's pointing out, that's good, that's nice, but still there's something beyond that. That's the direct that's connected to Krishna. Right? So even though you're situated in the position of engaging indirect, it doesn't mean that you're not directly seeing. Right? Because when Prahlad Maharaj is talking about Krishna in the pillar, he's seeing the person in the pillar, not his energies as Brahman or Paramatma. Does that make sense? In his commentary on this, to this verse, Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur raises and answers a question. But the Lord has said that his powers are inconceivable. Pashyame yogam aishvaryam. Aishvaram. How then can these powers remain inconceivable if they were just made conceivable with the conceivable example explained by them? Right? If you say they're inconceivable, how will you be able to conceive them? So the example, if it makes it conceivable, then how is it inconceivable? The sky is non-attached to the wind, which is contained within it. Because the sky and the wind are unconscious matter, and matter does not form attachments. However, only in one case does living spirit remain non-attached while living in this world and controlling it. And that is the case of the Supreme Controller. In this way, the inconceivability of the Supreme Controller's being non-attached is established. The example of the non-attached sky is nonetheless offered in order to give ordinary people an opportunity to begin to understand the subject. So he's saying is that it gives us an idea, an ability to understand like that. So the sky is non-attached, but also dead matter never gets attached. But in this case, the Lord remains that way. It's different because we only see things according to attachment. Right? But He's non-attached. He actually is. Right? Ishvara maintains and controls chit and achit, but He is not attached to them. Therefore, chit and achit cannot affect Him. So the living entities, the material world, all this cannot affect Him. What affects Him is that devotion. That's what then He's reciprocating. So when He says they are within me, that means, they are within your thoughts, within your feelings. Like that. Because otherwise, everything's in Him like this, the wind is in the sky. But at the same time, He's just not attached, so they're not within Him. I'm saying, just because you're physically situated there doesn't mean, like there's bugs in your stomach, right? You take your little, Danon, Acidophilus, or whatever, and so, so many bugs are there. But then they're inside, but that doesn't mean you have a relationship with them or care about them. What I'm saying? So, within means within the mind, within the heart. That's the actual point. So the other touches on that you're connected and all that, and that invokes those feelings, but it has to come to the point where it's actually the relationship with Krishna, not the medium of connecting it. You know what I'm saying? That interest in the medium, and then you connect that, that's still the indirect. It has to come to the point of direct, that you actually want to interact with Krishna as a person. In verses 4 to 6, Krishna discusses his involvement in the maintenance of the material world. In verses 7 to 8, he will explain destruction and creation. According to Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur, Arjuna now poses a question. I understand that everything is situated in you, but where will everything go at the time of annihilation? Verse 7 answers. At the beginning of the millennium, Krishna creates the material manifestations. At the end of the millennium, they enter into his nature. But how can he create if he is detached and unchangeable by nature? Right? Nature can't, you know, how would he have effect? He's not attached to it, so why would he be involved? You know? If he's not attached to it, how does he have effect on it? Right? Does that make sense? The Lord creates, you know, you're not attached to money, so how do you have effect on it? You're attached to it, you get in there and you use it and you deal with it and increase it. So the question is how is he unattached? He doesn't deal with it. At the same time, everything is happening. Right? Understand? So these are the, it means the Acharyas bring these fine points out, because this is the level that what you're working with. Because otherwise, these points are accepted by, you know, anybody who accepts Gita. But the philosophy of how they'll apply it will be different. So at where do you find that point where the difference is? So this is how you find it. The Lord creates the material world not directly, but by his will through his potency, Prakritim. Thus he can create and remain unchangeable at the same time, Shakti Parinama Vada. Right, because the energy is transforming. He never transforms. Right, he's unchangeable. Right, he's non-dual, because otherwise if he changes, there's a duality. He's non-dual. So that means even what's changing is still within his nature. Right? It's just, it changes in itself, but it's still, you know, your hand is this way, it's still your hand. It doesn't change its position. Your control. Although he uses his energy for the work of creation, he is independent from her. Madhvacharya explains in his commentary to verse 8, the Lord's making use of Prakriti for this purpose is only by way of sport. Just as a person strong enough to walk by himself without support sometimes carries a stick while walking. Right? The Lord is aloof and omniscient at the same time. The creation takes place automatically, and yet everything is under his control. Although he himself does not create nor destroy, the material nature acts by his desire. The whole cosmic order is under him, and by his own will he creates and annihilates again and again. So he desires it gets done. Right? So he's connected, but at the same time he's not attached to the result. That's the difference. In the material world, the man has his potency. And so he wants something done. So then through his potency, through his money, his power, influence, things happen. He's not doing them personally. But they're getting done. So the same way Krishna is the material energy. But the difference is there the man to his attachment is making it happen. It's his need that he's telling his men to do work. But for Krishna, he has no need. Right? The living entities do. So therefore, his desire is all this is arranged for them. But it's arranged according to how he says it will go. The game's his. You know? You know what I'm saying? The kids want to play, right? So then the mom makes, you know, rules, you know. No baseball bats in the house. You know, there's no jumping on the couch. You know, all these different things. No throwing water balloons. You know, there's different rules. And so then, you know, she doesn't need to play. You understand? So the Lord then is involved by his will, but he's not actually the one doing his, the energy takes care. As the Prabhupada said, is that the element of killing the demons is not the real reason he comes, because he could do, his material energy can do that. You know, she's quite capable. You know, any demon that no way can deal with, she can still get rid of. Like that. But he comes because of association with the devotees. That's why he comes. The Lord is aloof and omniscient at the same time. Okay. This is a manifestation of Krishna's mystic opulence, Yogam Aishwaram. Srila Prabhupada writes in the purport to verse 8, men, animal, beasts, birds, everything is simultaneously created, because whatever desires the living entities had at the last annihilation are again manifested. The state of being in their past life, in the past creation, is simply manifest again. And all this is done simply by his will. Right? In other words, so this answers the which came first, the chicken or the egg. They both came at the same time. This is the inconceivable potency of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And after creating different species of life, he has no connections with them. The creation takes place to accommodate the inclinations of the various living entities. And so the Lord does not become involved with it. Right? So he's created the species of life, but that doesn't mean the adibhautic forms of the living entities. He creates the adidaiva forms. Right? Like that. So in other words, the subtle, the universal form. So whatever is, because he says it's by his will, means he says there's 8,400,000. That's his will. And so you can't act outside of that. Yes?
Does he create everything at once?
Means the primary creation, it's all created at once. Because in the Purusha Shukta, then the creation has to go on, but there's nothing to make anything out of except him. So if you're going to... So for the Yajna, in other words, he's the Adi Yajna, but he's also the ingredients of the Yajna. Right? He's also the method of the Yajna. You know, because there isn't anything else. So then the sages, they take the Lord and then take him to the Yup. The Yup is the place where they sacrifice the animal. It looks kind of like this. It's a, you know, and they put the head of the animal there. So they take him there. And as soon as they put him there, then everything manifests. Right, so that's what the Purusha Shukta is describing. Right? So that means the primary creation. Right? Then Brahma is there, and then so that all this is, that's the lotus. And then Brahma is manifest, and then he does the secondary. So the Adi Bhautik is that's Brahma's creation, but the Adi Daivik, you know, means actually the universal form and the potencies of the demigod's position. That's the primary creation. That's done by the Lord. So that's all at once. The other one, then there's a bit of a hierarchy, but it doesn't take very long. You know, Brahma has his sons and you know, sons and that. Then from that you get the grandchildren, and then between the sons between the sons and the grandsons, all of them together, then they create all the species of life. You know what I'm saying? So within two generations, you know, the third generation, you already have the 8,400,000 species. The first two generations, you only have humans. Is that something? Yes?
Just as a side point, we are following the moon calendar, and there's 28 days in the month?
Basically.
And in the purport to verse 7, in Brahma's life, it says that his month consists of 30 days and this year of 12 months. How can we understand that?
Because you're basically working on a sun calendar. Right? Because we don't count days and nights by the moon. You know what I mean? We count it by the sun. A day is a sun. A titi is the combination, the difference of 1 degree between the sun and moon. So they're going to move a certain amount each day. So whether the difference of that 1 degree, that's going to be the titi. Does that make sense? But a moon's day itself can be anywhere from, I heard, 19 hours to 29 hours, something. Like that. So that's why the titis are always moving, and sometimes earlier or later. Sometimes, you know, a kadasi, you have, you know, like 5 minutes to break the fast, you know, at, you know, some ridiculous time. You know, at others times you have, you know, this huge amount of time. You understand? Because it moves differently every day. So where is the difference in movements between the two? That's where the titi is. Okay? Okay, so the full moon and the new moon, those are fixed. That'll be at 0 and 180 degrees. But anything in between for the moon is not regular. But the sun basically is regular. Is that okay? Yes.
Those sages you mentioned, who are those sages?
Those sages, aha, because this is before Brahma. These are the external associates, you know. So, you know, be, you know, Narad and Hanuman and, you know, all these kind of persons. Whenever you see pictures of Garbhodakshaya Vishnu, you know, like that, those sages, that's the
Garuda.
Yeah, Garuda, Hanuman, like this, you know, they're all always with him. I'm sure that there's so many, but they're not primordial. Yeah, it means all the demigods are based on them. You know, they expand, you know, their energies expand into that. So the Lord, wherever he is, he's always with his associates. Like you see Mahavishnu, when Arjuna and Krishna went to visit, then he had a palace and servants and everything like that. So, you know, they're always with their associates. So that's there. But until you can appreciate the Lord and in the relationship with his devotees, then that element's not brought out. So you just get the majesty of the Lord in the creation. So there's Mahavishnu, and then he glances, and there's Garbhodakshaya, then there's Kirodakshaya. Right? And so when you're dealing with that, nobody asks, well, where's Lakshmi and where's everybody else? You know, because you're just looking at that. But once one understands, then one understands that Krishna's there. So it's not that even Paramatma, it means we only relate to him, so he relates to us alone, but he's also there with all his associates. Right? But we don't see that, so therefore we deal with him that he's alone. That's why we say localized. It's just there. Otherwise, Bhagavan means him and his associates. But we don't see. Just like he's within the material energy, we see he's there. We don't see he's not there. Paramatma is Kirodakshaya. And the universal form is also a combination between Kirodakshaya Vishnu and Garbhodakshaya. Because Garbhodakshaya is the attractive element of the creation. Right? And all the different forms and everything that are there. And Kirodakshaya Vishnu is the, you know, need or the drive why you are involved in an activity. Therefore, he's the one that sanctions the activity. Does that make sense? You know, you're just appreciating the Lord. There's no need of a sanction there. But when you want to interact with that aspect, then the Lord sanctions. Because he's that goal that you want to obtain. Understand? So Brahman means you appreciate that dynamic. Paramatma means you want to be involved in it. Does that make sense? So both of them will be described as a universal form. Right? But there's that difference of one is Prajumna, the other is Aniruddha. And Mahavishnu is Shankarshan. Right? He's Shankarshan because he establishes the material creation. Right? Then Prajumna, he creates, Garbhodakshaya, he creates the interest. And Aniruddha, Kirodakshaya, he's the goal that you want to obtain. Right? So that means then there must be activity. So that what is proper activity, then that's defined by how Krishna comes in his avatars as Vasudev. Right? So Leela avatars establish what's the actual proper activity between the Lord and the devotees. Does that make sense?
So on the day we have the interaction of Sankarsana,
Arjuna, and Aniruddha. Yeah, all three are included in Vasudeva. So that means in the field with the proper, you know, understanding, I mean, with the proper inspiration, you know, I mean, the field with the proper understanding, you know, the proper activity with that inspiration, you know, trying to obtain that goal for the Lord's satisfaction, then there is activity. Does that make sense? So, just as Sambandha includes all the others, in like understanding, you know, or feeling. So Abhideya includes them in the way of you're practically acting upon that. Right? So the other you're not acting, you're only contemplating. Right? But in Vasudeva you're actually applying. Right?
So for the Sambandha Buddha inversion, we didn't contact with all of them. It's just a question of which element is predominant.
Yes, we're always in the Lord is one, right? Right. So there's not a matter of it being different. But at the same time, there is different flavors.
Right. Is that your point was done? Yeah, okay.
The Lord is not bound by His work of creation because bondage arises from attachment to action. Since all His desires are fulfilled automatically without the need of action, He is not attached to action, and therefore He is not entangled. Right? Because He's Atmarama. So just as desire, things happen. So it's only because of the devotee, then He actually personally gets involved. And then He performs an action, getting a result, all these different things like that. So He's not attached to that result. He's attached to that interaction with the devotees. You know, tasting that, experiencing that love. It's not the result that you get that was from the action itself. It's the experience gained. Yes.
So He is attached to that.
You could say. Is that a fault?
No.
See, that's the point. That'll come up at some point there, no? You have it in there somewhere? They discuss this point. Is it a problem? I think that's later when it describes about He favors the devotees or not. So is that a problem? No, but that's, it's not a problem. That's His specialness. You know, but he's not attached like that, because whatever He needs gets done. So, because attachment means I want it, therefore, then I'll make the endeavor and I'll get it. He just desires; it's already there. It's Him, you know, because everything's Him. So He's Atmarama; He's self-satisfied, because everything's Him. So therefore, what's not to be satisfied about? Right? Does that make sense? Yeah.
So the problem would only come out for the envious, right? Because then he would not accept that He's given a special.
Yeah, those are envious and those, yeah, because then how do you interact with them? They don't like you anyway. So then, you know, the one of the rules of the Dharma Shastra is where you're insulted, you don't go there. If people don't like you there, why go there? You know, that's the rule. Right, so he's not, yeah, his desires are automatically fulfilled, so he's not attached to action. Because action is what will get the result. We want to do the action because we get the result. But he's not attached to it, so therefore he's not attached to action. Therefore he's Atmarama. Since the living beings receive the results of the previous pious and impious activities, the Lord cannot be considered unjust. He is situated neutrally, like an indifferent person who is not affected by the happiness and distress of the quarreling parties. This is confirmed in Vedanta Sutra 2.135. The Lord has no partiality or cruelty, because the pleasure and pain suffered by the living entity is caused by their karma. So the scriptures declare. Yeah, so the scriptures declare. Still, yeah. Okay, so, in other words, he's created the world, and that he's set the parameters by which it works, which it functions. And the living entity works within that, you get a good result, or you get a bad result. And then they're awarded that. They wanted it, then they're getting it. You could say, you know, what does it matter what you guys want, you know? And so then nothing happens. Right? So one can't say that the Lord is unkind. Right? He is creating an environment in which those living entities who are envious can still, you know, experience the fulfillment of their desires. But he still sets the parameters. You know, it's he's supplying everything, so it's his parameters. Right? Because the purpose of the material world is to again resituate yourself as servant of the Lord. Right? So it's not designed that one would stay here. It's designed that you would get out.
That philosophical discussion about the problem of evil.
Problem of evil, yes.
Is that because they cannot see that the ultimate goal is to go back to God, so they're attached to being here?
Yeah, they're attached to being here, but they don't also, generally speaking, they don't understand the element of the control of the Lord, how he's involved but not involved. So the difficulty is if he's involved, he's the creator, so he's doing the things, but that means things that go wrong, then he would be blamed for because he's doing it. You know, so therefore, to keep him from being blamed, you know, then he's deified. So he's beyond, but he's not actually involved. But if he's not involved, someone else has to be managing it. So then that creates two controllers. You understand? And then that controls us. You know, but one, we don't see, we see the eternality of the soul, but we don't see the element of reincarnation. You know, we think the soul is created from matter. It just happens to be now. The combination of the father and mother, then out of dead matter, then the soul is created. Like that. You know what I'm saying? So then this is going to be a major weakness. And then, therefore the soul moves forward and goes wherever he's going. But they don't understand but why are the situations different? Who's controlling that? So, therefore, the living entity has the opportunity to follow the laws of God. If he does, he gets a good result. He doesn't, he gets a bad result. So that's all. Krishna's not attached. Because in any case, the soul is eternal, so he's not actually affected by it. So it's an illusion to think that the soul is affected. Right? But because of identification, therefore, you know, it's just like, you know, one is watching a drama. One is affected by the things, the different feelings, but one is not part of that drama. You know what I'm saying? So like that, the soul is so identifies with it. You know? Does that make sense? Though they're not, you know. Does that make sense? Still, the Lord is not completely neutral, because completely neutral would forbid any sense of doership by him. Therefore, he says, I am situated as if neutral. Udasinavad. One should not misinterpret the Lord's neutrality as inactivity. Srila Prabhupada explains in the purport to verse 9. One should not think in this connection that the Supreme Personality Godhead has no engagement. In his spiritual world, he is always engaged. In the Brahma Samhita 5.6, it is stated, Atmaramasya tasyasti prakritya nasamagama. He is always involved in his eternal blissful spiritual activities, but he has nothing to do with these material activities. Because otherwise, one would say he's not involved, so he's just Atmarama, so then he's just neutral. So therefore, the Brahman unchanging on this. But he's engaged in the eternal pastimes in the spiritual world. Right? He's engaged with the devotees. So that's that element, he's always engaged. This world is a reflection of that. Therefore, he defines what's good and bad, depending upon what is good, you know, for the spiritual pastimes. And what's opposed to it, that will be bad here. Just people don't know that the good and bad's based on devotional service. So they think good and bad stand on its own. Right? Therefore, so many days before that we were discussing the idea of something being good and being nice and morality and ethics and justice based on its own is still illusion. Because why is it there? Why are those rules there? Because they're not supportive of devotional service. Does that make sense?
But,
in verse 10, the Lord further explains his inconceivable position of being an indirect controller of everything. The material nature is one of Krishna's energies working under his direction. All moving and non-moving beings are produced under its rule. In this comment, in his commentary, so moving and non-moving. Yeah, okay. In his commentary, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur gives the example of a king who, although aloof, controls the whole kingdom through his ministers. Just as the ministers are incapable of doing anything without the presence of the king sitting on his throne, unconscious matter cannot do anything without the directorship of the Lord. Verse 10 is further clarified in Bhagavad Gita 14:13, wherein the Lord says, "The total material substance called Brahman is the source of birth, and it is that Brahman that I impregnate." Making possible the birth of all living beings, O son of Bharata. Material nature is sometimes called Brahman because Brahman is the cause of the material nature. In one sense, there is no difference between the cause and its effect. But Bhagavan Krishna is the ultimate source of Brahman. Right? So Brahman is what is creating everything, because that is what is defines your primary creation. Right? And so the material energy is based on that. Right? So the cause and the effect. So then, but the thing is still, he is, as a person, beyond that Brahman. It's not different from him, but he's still beyond.
The primary creation is the pradhana, right?
Means, it would be, we call it mahat. His pradhana is before the Lord impregnates. Okay. So it's just Brahman. But he impregnates, then it's mahat. That's where the primary creation is. Like that. But it's still Brahman, even as Pradhan. Right? But it's inferior Brahman. But its reason it functions is because of superior Brahman. Right? The Lord's potencies. Is that? The material nature is sometimes called Brahman because Brahman is the cause of the material nature, and in one sense there is no difference between the cause and its effect. But Bhagavan Krishna is the ultimate source of Brahman. The Lord impregnates Brahman in the form of the material nature with the seed of Brahman known as the Jiva. Thus the supreme Brahman, Sri Krishna, is identical with both the Jiva and Prakriti in that they are all Brahman. In this sense, the Vaishnavas are pure monists. Right? The others aren't pure monists. They're materialistically tinged monists. They're not actually pure spiritual monists. In his purport, Srila Prabhupada summarizes the relationship between the Lord and his energy. Because he glances over material nature, there is undoubtedly activity on the part of the Supreme Lord. But he has nothing to do with the manifestation of the material world directly. This example is given in the Smriti. When there is a fragrant flower before someone, the fragrance is touched by the smelling power of the person. Yet the smelling and the flower are detached from one another. There's a similar connection between the material world and the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Actually, it has nothing to do with the material world, but he creates by his glance and ordains. In summary, material nature without the superintendence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead cannot do anything, yet the Supreme Personality is detached from all material activities. Does that make sense? So the flower is there, that, you know, its scent is there, the nose can perceive it. But the flower has nothing to do with your nose. But the reason that you can smell it is because of the fragrance of the flower. Does that make sense? But they're not connected. So in the same way as by the Lord's desire, you know, then it all happens. But he's not involved with the specific manifestation. Like that. He's established how it works, that its existence is there, its purpose being to go back to Godhead, and the laws on which it functions. But now, according to each living entity's desire,
they are given a particular specific situation and body, you know, and results based on their previous activities. Right? So that's the material energy carries out. Does that make sense? But it's simply his desire that's going on. It's his potency. He's non-different, but at the same time he's different. So that's why when the devotee is involved, then Krishna himself can personally be involved. But if it's not, material energy takes care.
Someone may ask, if Krishna is the Supreme Person, why don't all people worship him? The Lord answers in verse 11. So verses 11 to 15. Fools deride me when I descend in the human form. They do not know my transcendental nature as the Supreme Lord of all that be. Those who are thus bewildered are attracted by demoniac and atheistic views. In that deluded condition, their hopes for liberation, their fruit of activities, and their culture of knowledge are all defeated. Or Sanaprita, those who are not deluded, the great souls, are under the protection of the divine nature. They are fully engaged in devotional service because they know me as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, original and inexhaustible. They always chant my glories, endeavoring with great determination. Bowing down before me, these great souls perpetually worship me with devotion. Others who are engaged in sacrifice by the cultivation of knowledge worship the Supreme Lord as the one without a second, as diverse in many and in the universal form. Verses 11 to 15. Without knowing the transcendental nature of Krishna as the Supreme Lord, the foolish deride him when he appears in his human form. Such persons are bewildered in two ways. They do not know the confidential activities of the Supreme Lord, and they do not understand how his energies work. Bewildered by Krishna's human-like form, they do not understand that his body is transcendental, full of knowledge, bliss, and eternity. Krishna's body is called Manushin, not because it has the limitations of the human body, but because it has an eternal form with human appearance, and because he performs human-like activities. So based on that, Manushin, then what would the Elohim mean? The Muddhas cannot conceive that Krishna, appearing like an ordinary human being, can be the controller of the microscopic atoms of the gigantic universal form at the same time. They cannot comprehend that he is controlling both the infinite and the minute, and is simultaneously aloof from them. Right? So this is, because basically, we can, in one sense, understand energy, but God, technically, we can't, because he's the energetic, we're the energy. How will understand? Right? Does that make sense? So, in other words, such foolish persons do not understand Krishna's yoga Aishwaram, his mystic opulences, described in verses 4 to 10. Instead of accepting him as he is, they speculate that he is just a powerful man who has acquired mystic perfections by following karma and jnana. Others think that the intrinsically impersonal absolute truth has descended in the material world as an avatar with a material body. Thus they commit the biggest offense, to distinguish between Lord Krishna and his form. Right, so that's not considered good. But at the same time, why would Brahman descend as an avatar? That means that there is desire, there's will. And otherwise, why would he do it? They say, well, it's pastimes, but that means then there's consideration, there's personal. So makes sense. So, you know, their philosophy kind of falls apart on them. But because of the demoniac nature, they just finesse it. You know, just like you do something wrong, other people point it out, but you finesse it, right? You know, it's like, you know, it's not a big deal.
Right? Someone else does something wrong. Okay, that's a point of discussion. Right? But, you know, what we do wrong, hey, you know, it's not a point of discussion. So, like that, due to illusion, then all these points that are weaknesses in their philosophy, they obviously point to the personal element. They just finesse that. They just have some other thing that they move on to. Right? That's the mental speculation. There's actually ultimately no conclusion because they just keep moving from one mental concoction to the next so that it appears that it's consistent philosophy. But actually it's not. You know, that's why Prabhupada, when he would discuss, depending on the person, if they were very adamant or he would just grab them on the point of their philosophy. Just take any point and then make them define it and make them use that as the consistency for anything else. And so people who are used to speculating become highly disturbed, you know, like that. They just can't handle it. Like that. Does that make sense? So automatically you'll defeat them.
He would call that he would find a weak point and push on it until he killed him.
Yeah, he said like that. Yeah. Because that's it, because it's a weak point. So they can go anywhere else you want, but that point can't be answered. So if that's bad, then everything else is not going to work.
With Christians, you point out not killing animals.
Yeah, so God says, thou shalt not kill. So what does that mean? Right? And they're not so clever, so they can't define it as good as the Jews. So Jews have figured out a way around that. You know? But the Christians haven't figured that out yet. It actually means kill here in this instance means murder. So it means don't kill people. That's the definition. Works for them, hey, you know. But here the point is kill is kill. You don't see it in another sense because otherwise it would consistently use that. And then in another place it would, you know, but otherwise it defines murder. Just like it always consistently uses meat and flesh. So meat means food. Flesh means, you know, somebody's body. You know, but the problem is because there isn't that application necessarily difference within the other languages. So they misapply that because they're synonyms, so they take it as a synonym to support the non-vegetarian element. They kind of say you have to be, otherwise that's not... You're not religious if you're vegetarian. Some will even take it that far. But, you know, then that means for 40 years in the desert, they weren't religious because they were eating manna, which was vegetarian. You know. And that was what God provided. You know. So, we see a pattern here, right? God, the garden, vegetarian, manna, vegetarian, like this. So here, then, kill means kill. Right. So you take that point and you just continue with that, and then it'll be more difficult to go because they'll want to go to another point. You caught them on that. Okay, let's go to another point. The Lord's opinion about these seemingly erudite arguments is expressed in verse 11. Fools deride my descent, thinking that I've assumed this human form. Srila Prabhupada explains in renunciation through wisdom. The demons invariably confuse matters. They worship humans as gods and call God a human being. Right? Now that's, think about that. That's really stupid, right? And then, you know, anybody can be God, but God can't be God. He's just a human, right? You know, it's like that. You know, it's like the Mayavadis. They won't go into temples, right? Because, you know, God's everywhere. If he's God, he's everywhere. He's also in the temple. So what's the big deal? You know, like that. You know, so. In the Bhagavad Gita, the Lord fittingly describes as grossly foolish persons. Avajananti ma mudha manushim tanum ashritam. Bhagavad Gita 9:11. Fools deride me when I descend in the human form. The demons learning, intelligence, and titles are like the gems that glitter on a poisonous snake's hood. The presence of a priceless gem on a snake's hood does not decrease his venom.
Similarly, a demon's erudition, intelligence, and titles do not make him less of a demon. And thus he is as horrendous as the venomous snake. Right? So he's educated, he's cultured, he does so many nice works. It still doesn't mean he's a demon, because we get the idea a demon has to be, you know, disgusting and nasty. But even in just in the universal affairs, you have the daityas and the danavas. Right? So the daityas generally are the refined, you know, I'd say, you know, Upper East Side demigods, right? I mean demons like that. Hiranyakashipu and Bali Maharaj are all daityas. The danavas are that can be down, a little bit more down home, right? You know, a little more rough and ready and stuff. So, but we have this idea that demon must be bad in everything. So we get bewildered when, oh, but he's nice, he speaks so nice, and he gives in charity and supports so many things, but it still doesn't mean that his demoniac nature is any less poisonous. You know, just because there's a nice, you know, some nice, seemingly nice qualities there. So one has to be very, very careful. The association is he's doing all those nice things for his own purpose. So that's the weakness. Because sacrifice means you're trying to give up doing things for your own purpose. Right? Just because I give in charity, but my purpose is to be recognized as a you know, religious man or something, that doesn't mean that charity is of great quality. Charity has been done, but if only the charity is important. But that's why Gita mentions the mentality when you give charity. So charity in the modes. Right? So therefore, if he's giving in the mode of passion, then by their association, you will develop the mode of passion. So that's poisonous. So that's why one must be very careful. Otherwise you go, oh, but the karmis are so much nicer than devotees. You know, this and that. It says, yeah, but then what, by their association, what will you develop? You know, you develop into a pleasant demon.
Association, when we are present at the same room or something, what's the element that characterizes association?
Association. Basically taking on the other person's like values, you know, and working within that context. It's different from you see their values and then present Krishna consciousness in that context. But it's actually you think that context itself is important. Because then you become like them. Like you work with the media. They have their idea of truth and justice and all this. So if you take on that mood, then that's association. Otherwise, where did devotees get that from? Does Prabhupada talk like that? No, the devotees talk like that. Where'd they get it? By association. So they've taken on this. They're supposed to give association, not take. You know, so you do their things, eat their food, you know, yeah, associate, you know, do the things that they do. That's when you become like them. But it means you take on that mentality. You know. But when you see it, no, Krishna's arranging this and it's Krishna's, then you're not associating. You know. So it's by Krishna's grace, you know, that you've gotten this food or this or that. Not by their grace. You'll deal with them nicely because they're the medium for Krishna's giving you. You know what I'm saying? So you see them as, you know, Krishna's messenger. So you're not associating with the demoniac nature. You're seeing them in their actual position. If you take it on, oh, they're so nice and all that, and I went to the temple, I didn't give me anything, but I went here and they fed me. So that means you're associated. You know, but if you go there and Krishna gives you something, go to the temple, you get nothing, you know, so therefore Krishna has something, you know, he's saying or something. You know, you're being arrogant or something, or, you know, there's something that he has that he wants to say. You're not getting food at the temple. You've been bad, but he doesn't want you to go starve, so then, you know, you get it somewhere else. So, you know, you can't eat at the table. You have to go eat in the next room.
You know, so you can't be with everybody else. So, you know, it is a punishment, but you still be fed. You understand? So, in a sense. But otherwise, we interpret it not connected to Krishna. So therefore, we're associating with them. You understand? So, you see, consciousness is the whole principle. Like that. Consciousness is correct, then that's fair. Because otherwise, activity is not going to change. In all these chapters of Gita, the activity itself never changes. What changes is the consciousness. Right? You know, from purely material to materially engaged in the spiritual to purely spiritual. Decorating a dead body and taking it to the funeral pyre with pomp is certainly nothing but a flagrant display for entertainment only. Like that. The public is similarly cheated when accolades and scholarly degrees are piled on a demon who is an errant competitor of the Supreme Lord. The atheistic, demoniac education imparted to the young in modern universities is simply producing a bunch of demons with titles. Proof of this is the recent incidents in which Principal Garg of Aligarh University was murdered by some students. The governor has called for a conference of the leaders and teachers, but in the past, all such conferences have met with the same frustrating fate, no solution. We think the present conference will also fail. The only means to eradicate the demoniac mentality in society is to teach the science of Krishna consciousness. Having taken note of all the disaster and corruption wreaked by the demons, it is the moral responsibility of every citizen in the world to learn and teach the science of Krishna consciousness. Prabhupada doesn't pull any punches here. Verse 12 describes, because you have to, if you're looking at it from the absolute platform, you can see it as it is. It doesn't mean that if Prabhupada goes to that university, he doesn't deal nicely with the scholars. You know, there's no scholar that you hear of that didn't appreciate Prabhupada. Right? But, you know, it doesn't mean that he appreciates their position. But they're knowledgeable, so you deal with them through knowledge. They're respected, so you deal with them on that platform. Right? But this is as, so then we'll take it, oh yeah, they're all nonsense. So when you deal with them as if they're a nonsense. No, that's not how it works. It's just stating so you know what their position is compared to the Supreme Lord. You know, and compared to devotional service. So then you can understand where the weakness is. Does this make sense? Yes.
Does here the term moral responsibility indicate that the duty of the devotee while he's in the material world, understanding even though it's temporary, he still should do something about keeping the place clean?
Yeah, you could say. Moral responsibility, because that's the ethic, that's what one's supposed to do. See, because here then the morality is connected to Krishna. You know, what's the proper human ethic? What should you do? You should help others, right? Because the morality, you're supposed to get into charity, do all these nice things. So this is the real extended sense gratification, and that they're engaged in sense gratification for themselves. You teach them how to engage in that sense gratification to please the Lord. So even though the field they may be using is pranamoy, you elevate it to anandamoy. Is that okay?
Yeah? I was wondering about the relationship between ethics and dharma.
Ethics and dharma. See, ethics, basically you're working on, it's a smaller circle. Dharma is the bigger circle because you're talking about what activity I should do. Right? Because I am a member, let's say, of this universe. Right? Because dharma will work on that level. Or you can say even a member of the creation, because real dharma will include devotional service. It means that devotional service is the actual dharma. And then since you are performing that actual dharma within the material world, therefore you have the conditioned dharma, right, as your medium. But the actual dharma is Sanatana dharma. Right? So you're a member of the creation, so I should be engaged in devotional service and being within this material world, then according to my condition, position, you know, the position that I'm in, whether you're, you know, conditioned or not, but within that position. So that will take into consideration any effect anywhere that your action will have. Right? So therefore, Dharma will say you do these different things. But in that, then one sees that in the overall, everything works out. Like for Yudhishthira, everything worked out in the end. No? But following the Dharma, there's going to be profit and loss along the way. Right? But if he doesn't act the way he does, let's say at the gambling match, then is he going to have the support of the Supreme Lord and all of these other kings? Right? All these sages, everybody's supporting them. Nobody is you know, of any repute is talking nicely about Duryodhana. All the sages, everybody is feeling that this is wrong. Right? The demigods. Right? So, therefore, what he's doing, even though there's loss now, is actually incompatible with his position within the creation. Right? Does that make sense? And everything will work out. Artha means within that big circle, you look at just the profit and loss aspect. Right? So therefore, in profit and loss, he should have acted differently when it came to the gambling match. Does that make sense? So Dharma, because they agreed to the match and they lost, therefore they uphold that. But Niti would have been, as soon as it goes this way and they see us cheating, Bhima picks up his club, smashes Duryodhana over the head, hits, and then swings the other way, hits, Karna and Shakuni, and problem solved. Everyone goes home and, everything's nice. That's it. That would be Niti. Here's your enemy. Here's an opportunity. Then take it and get your profit. In other words, the element of loss is not tolerated. But in Dharma, you understand when there's profit, there's going to be loss. So it's taught also within higher elements of Niti. But that's because it's based on Dharma. So all the uplifting elements of Niti, or ethics, is actually quoting from Dharma. It's directly Dharma. Those things that are simply efficiently getting your work done without any, chance of not getting it, that's just pure Niti. Does that make sense? So Duryodhana worked on Niti. Yudhishthira worked on Dharma. That's why, Duryodhana appeared to be successful in the beginning. Right? So that was Draupadi's doubt. You're doing all this religious stuff, and he's not, and he's sitting on the throne, and you're in the forest. No, you've done religion. You should be sitting there. He should be in the forest. So why is it like this? Because there's a bigger picture. There's the time factor.
Story isn't done yet.
Yeah. That's the Lord's pastime, but so in any case, there's something to happen, something to learn, something to. And so it goes on in that way, and then eventually it works out. So you understand that? And then Kama will take even smaller than that, because Artas means you're going to get profit, but Kama, you're enjoying that profit, using that profit right now. And so it may be that what you're doing in Kama may be bad for Arta. Or what you're doing in Artha may be bad for Dharma. You understand? So that's why that it says that one must balance the three. And if you don't balance, then you're not behaving right. In other words, sense gratification shouldn't be against the religious principles. You know what I'm saying? It shouldn't be against profit. You know what I'm saying? But also it's in Artha. If you don't, you have wealth, if you don't enjoy the wealth, it's as if you don't have it. Right? You have it, it's in the bank, you never spend it, but it's as good as not having it. Because neither are you giving it in charity and benefiting others, nor are you being benefited. You know what I'm saying? So something should be there, but not so much. You know what I'm saying? So, because real wealth is that which is used. You know what I'm saying? You know, it's like you say, well, you know, who's the richest guy now? Okay, he's got so many billions, but what does he actually have? He's got it on paper, you know. So what wealth does he actually have? You know, if he says, okay, he's got, you know, a house in every major city of the world, he's got this, that's his wealth. The other stuff, it's, you know, potentially there, but, you know what I'm saying? You know, if you have food and you don't eat it, can you really say you have food? You have a kitchen full of food that you never eat. No, it's what you eat and what you share with others. That you can say is real food. You understand? So it will define that. So those who are smart will take that because that's based on Dharma. You know, because it's through activity that you get results. So real niti will be based on Dharma. You understand? But there are those who take it and, you know, basically pull it out of its natural thing and try to present it on its own. You know, just like you have karma is part of devotional service and these activities in devotional service, but it gets pulled out and made into its own separate. So it's like that. So therefore, everything has its natural position within the devotional process.
Visually, I have like a big circle, which is Dharma, inside Artha, and inside Artha, Kama.
Yeah, because if you don't have Artha, how do you have Kama? Right. You know, because what you're enjoying is is facility. Right. But then Dharma, it's within the element of that you're actually supposed to, that you're not this body, you're Brahman. So it's within moksha. And that's within, because Brahman is just one aspect of the Lord. So that's within devotion to the Lord. So the big circle is devotional service. It includes all the others. But we try to say, oh, there's devotional service, and then there's this, and then there's that. No, there's only devotional service. You see it, then Krishna's there. You don't see it, Krishna's not there. You know, that's Krishna's point. He's in everything, but he's not. You know, everything's in me, but it's not there. So you see Krishna, he's there. He doesn't see Krishna, it's simply his will. Is that okay?
Yeah. Sorry?
Maharaj,
you mentioned that you need to balance all these three.
Yes.
So can you elaborate on this?
If this was a class on Niti Shastra, I would. But this is a class on, right now we're on pure unalloyed devotion. You understand? In other words, if you're always engaged just in doing your religious duties and at the same time not paying attention to the natural results that come from that and engaging those, then you won't have anything that you can engage for, you know, taking care of yourself. If whatever you have, you only spend it and use it without generating more, then it runs out. You know what I'm saying? If you're only focused on gaining, then you don't see that what's the results. It means the activities you're performing, are they in line with Dharma or not? It's like the man, he goes and he works 16 hours a day, he's filthy rich and all that, but his family, you know, his kids move out on him, his wife divorces him. Why? He's got money, but he's not enjoying it. You know what I'm saying? And at the same time, is being more, because part of his duties is taking care of his family. He's not doing that. He's saying, I have money, therefore the family's taken care of. No, it's not. You know, the example is given. If I have medicine, and I say, I have this medicine, does that mean your disease goes away? No, you have to take the medicine. Just by saying the name of the medicine doesn't make the disease go away. Right, so he's saying, I'm taking care of the family, but he's not. He's getting money that you could use to take care of the family, but he's not taking care of the family. So he's not following his dharma as a grihastha. He's overemphasizing the artha, and there is no kama. So therefore it falls apart. Even though they have the 4-bedroom house and, you know, a BMW and a Mercedes and, you know, a pool and, you know, an Afghan dog, you know, it still doesn't work. Does that make sense?
In verse 12, describe what happens to those who deride Krishna's form. Such bewildered people are attracted by demoniac and atheistic views. Their hopes for liberation, fruit of activities, and culture of knowledge are defeated due to delusion. Right? Because liberation is based on being the soul, not the body. Right? So you have to be able to appreciate the transcendental position. Fruit of activities and culture of knowledge. There, because of delusion, then you can't actually do the work properly. You won't get the result. You'll make mistakes. Because in fruit of activities, it's the expertise of the action performed that gives you the perfection of a result. Right? And then if there's delusion, how will there be knowledge? So they will lose everything. It's just time. So the idea is we try to help them before they lose everything. But if they don't, you don't have... If you're worried about justice, don't worry. Maya's taking care of it. You know. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur explains in his commentary, if the devotees are in this condition, their aspirations are in vain, mogashaha. They do not achieve shalokya, or whatever else they have desired. If they are karmis, they do not attain the results of their actions, such as swarga, moga karmana. If they are jnanis, they do not attain the result of knowledge and liberation, moga jnana. Then what do they attain? They assume the nature, prakriti, of rakshasas. Right? So it's interesting that he starts with devotees. If they're in this condition of not appreciating Krishna's transcendental form and all that, then their aspirations are in vain. Right? So they don't attain that transcendental position they want. Like that. The conclusion is that those who refuse to accept Krishna's transcendental form are defeated in all their attempts. In contrast to the bewildered mudhas, devotees accept Krishna as he is. That interesting, says everybody explained before was mudas, right? So because we're thinking mudas just that, you know, guy that, you know, never made it past sixth grade and works down at the docks or something, but here, you know, he went through, you know, every level of everything. So muda means just one's foolish, right? Devotees accept Krishna as he is, although the foolish cannot imagine how Krishna, who appears just like a human being, can control the infinite and the finite. Those who are pure devotees accept this, for they know that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, they completely surrender unto him and engage in Krishna consciousness, devotional service of the Lord. Bhagavad Gita 9:11 purport. So the devotees are surrendered, so then they avoid such problems. Right? So, because generally speaking, the sampradayic devotees won't have this problem, because you also have, you know, samanya devotees, or ordinary devotees, that they're born in devotee families, they're, you know, in these kind of situations where they're associating with, they identify themselves with the devotional process, but they don't take the process of association of devotees, you know, that bhajana kriya, all this is not there because their faith is not that strong, you know. The devotees, you know, you go to their house, they're devotees, they worship Krishna or worship Ram, but ultimately if you ask, then they'll say, well, he's formless. Right, so they are worshiping in vain. Yes.
What does it mean if the devotee has rakshasa ganam in their charts?
What happens if he's rakshasa ganam in his charts? So you want to know if he's, you know, how you say? Generally, I mean, so you're wondering if that means that generally that there won't be any dogs or cats in the neighborhood. So you know. Is that kind of what you mean? You think? No, rakshasa gan means there. It's simply what is their natural, natural life environment that they prefer living in. Right? You know, in other words, the devaganam likes everything ordered, nice, everything is placed, and rakshasa means they don't really care. You know, in other words, you have those who the whole house or their room is just covered. Everything goes, you know, and like that, all over the place. And they're comfortable, you know. And then you have the other extreme where everything is exactly in its place. Manushya means there'll be a mix.
You know, it means some things are like this, some things are that, so you can kind of move. So that's why bestas are the same, because then if they're both slobs, then it works. You know, or they're both, you know, how you say, completely organized. I was going to say re-Vanderbilt. But if they're like that, then it all works. Right? But if not, then, you know, like that. But otherwise, you can get by with 1 degree. But if there's 2 degrees difference, then that will really be a problem.
Deva and Rakshasa.
Yeah, Deva and Rakshasa means they want everything ordered. Why are you always tying? Just relax, you know. You know, it's not, that's not relaxed. That's called a pig, you know, like that. You know, so, you know, you have to find the balance. So minutia means it's, you know, that's why, because a human form, it's in between. Demigods, everything's so pukka. Vaikuntha, everything's so pukka. You know, but humans, there's a little bit of space like that. But it's still based on Dharma and all that. You know, so it's, is that okay? So it's just a consideration there. It doesn't mean someone's a Rakshasa. It just means that's their nature.
Could it be more in their dealings rather than their organization?
It would be, yeah. It means they're more rough. They don't worry about these things. David would be more careful about these things and, you know, like that. It's just a matter of the environment that they like to be in, whatever it is, physical, emotional, intellect, Rakshasa means it's more sloppy. It's not as defined. You know, well, Devato means it's more defined.
Maharaj, would that information also tell us about previous life?
Previous life? Yeah. Means if it's Rakshasa this life, he must have been a bit of a slob last life. You know, or didn't, you know, care about these things and that, so. Does that make sense? So that means there's devotees who have taken up the process. They've accepted, so they don't have a problem with this. So that's why they advance. That's why they can understand these chapters. Right? But in general, you know, maybe can't. Because they don't really understand how Krishna could do these things, or why did he do what he did, you know, in the battle of Kurukshetra, and different things. They have these doubts, so they can't actually understand these things. So that's why it said this is being told to Arjuna, because he doesn't have any of these problems. Right? So he's good. The position of the devotees is described in verses 13 to 14. The devotees who are not deluded are great souls and under the protection of divine nature, knowing Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, original and inexhaustible. They fully engage in devotional service. Srila Prabhupada describes these great souls in his purport to verse 13. The Mahatma does not divert his attention to anything outside Krishna, because he knows perfectly well that Krishna is the original Supreme Person, the cause of all causes. There is no doubt about it. Such a Mahatma, a great soul, develops through association with other Mahatmas, pure devotees. Oh, okay, I get it. Such a Mahatma or great soul develops through association with other Mahatmyas, pure devotees. Pure devotees are not even attracted by Krishna's other features, such as the four-armed Mahavishnu. They are simply attracted by the two-armed form of Krishna. They are always engaged in the unswerving service of the Lord in Krishna consciousness. So we see here's where this line is being drawn, is that it's not that they don't see these other aspects of Krishna, but it's not so interesting. So they may start from there, but immediately will come up to Krishna as a person. So that two-armed form of Shyamasundara, that's what's interesting to them. Other aspects aren't. So that sweetness of him, if it's Krishna, then where's the sweetness? So a particular aspect of the creation doesn't carry that sweetness. Right? So that's why it's not of great interest. But you can see the connection, like Prabhupada was saying, when they were in Calcutta during World War II and they were bombing Calcutta, then he could see Krishna in the bombing, but he says, you know, it's not a very nice form of Krishna. You know, it's not like a sweet form in Braj or something like that. So it's still, it's Krishna. That potency, that, you know, that power, that is still Krishna. But it's still not that nicer form, so they just like these other forms. You know what I'm saying?
So Maharaj here, he's pointing out the mood, right? So you pick up the mood from this.
Yes, you pick up the mood. So that's why the pure devotees, through association, you pick up the mood. That's the most important thing. I've heard before, I haven't seen it, I don't know if you even have seen it, said, quote where Prabhupada says is, the mood is the most important thing you can gain from the spiritual master. Because the mood defines where you go in the spiritual world, what kind of service you take up. So mood is everything. That's the problem with the demons. It's not that the activity is a problem, necessarily, because there's very pious demons. Right? They know good work gets good results. It doesn't mean that the mentality isn't demoniac, because here, demoniac means it's just materialistic. Demoniac doesn't necessarily mean that they're, you know, nasty. Ugra karma has its grossest manifestation, but it also is ugra karma means that karma which is not connected to Krishna. Does that make sense? So maybe very nice, but the mood's wrong. The activities may be nice. Does that make sense?
I don't know about the quote of the mood, but there was one quote that by association with advanced devotees, the bhakti shakti which emanates from them, that influences you.
Yes, no, that'll be there. Well, it's like, that would be the example, like the conduit, it carries the electricity. You know, so that when I'm connecting with them, then that chit potency flows. That's why the preachers, one's not supposed to criticize them, because they're the ones through which this potency flows. Does that make sense? Verse 14 describes the activities of such mahatmas, always chanting Krishna's glories, endeavoring with great determination, bowing down before him. These great souls perpetually worship him with devotion. Right? Because they're not distracted by anything else, so therefore they always engage in devotional service. If we're distracted, then that means to that degree we're not. So that then, by that distraction, you connect it back to Krishna, then it becomes, you know, connected again. So the karma yoga, the jnana yoga, whatever is distracting us, gets connected, but we have to remember is that connection is still indirect. Because it's through that medium of distraction is what you're serving Krishna with. Rather than you're serving Krishna and using the material energy. You know what I'm saying? Nobody says. So that's why it's called Misra. Because it's mixed with that. But it's still elevating. So that part that is direct is going to give that direct result. That part that's indirect will give you liberation. But that liberation means Brahma-Bhuta, not moksha. Because Brahma-Bhuta means you're situated on the transcendental platform as a devotee of Krishna. Right? So you're going to come to the neutral state with the mentality of serving Krishna. Well, moksha means you come to the neutral state and there's no idea of serving. Yeah, and then you come back because you have to do something. And so then you come back.
What about the other mokshas that you wish to have a same body as Krishna?
Those are okay. But then, okay, then once you have it, then what? But from that, then you'll serve. So it's not unfavorable for devotional service, but it's not pure, unalloyed devotional service. So it can be pure devotional service, because your service is just directed to the Lord, but you don't want these kind of situations. But you find all those things come automatically if you are just trying to please the Lord. So pure, unalloyed devotional service, there's nothing missing. You know, you're on the same planet. You are associated with the Lord. You have the same kind of form. You know, it means, in other words, you don't, Vaikuntha, you look exactly the same, you know, except for the Srivatsa. But there is, you have a form that's compatible with, you know what I'm saying? Like you have, let's say, a dinner set. It all matches, it's all the same. But, you know, you can tell the difference between a fork, a knife, a spoon, a plate, a cup. But they all match. So that's the thing. Then you can do more. Because otherwise, if, you know, I have this great dinner set, I see my new dinner set, and you come and open up the box and everything, and the person looks, and It's all forks. You know, what about place? No, no, no. This is what's so unique. Everybody else has forks. I have, you know, plates. I have just forks. Like that. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, it's nice. But, you know, there is things that happen more. It means if it's just opulence and aishwarya and then on reverence, then everybody being the same form is okay. But when you have all these other rasas, it's you know, nice to be. In other words, if you can't tell the difference between Mother Jashoda and Subal and Radharani, you know, then how is this going to work? That's why you sit around and say prayers, because everyone looks the same, you know. You know what I'm saying? No?
Yeah.
So. Okay. Those who are attached to the impersonal Brahman, feature of the Absolute Truth are not among the Mahatmas described here. They describe in a different way in the next verse. Okay, so that will continue with on Thursday. Sorry.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhakti Vrindi.